Desi Pelletier Yinche, Mai Dishini Nishli, Biligana Bashin, Keen Lachini Dashache, Biligana Dashinelli. Res Ball is back with the Pistons pod. Andy and I just can't wait for the season to be over. Andy starts talking about that this team's going to miss some steps in development. If you think they're going to take a step forward next season, highly unlikely. We look at realistic trades as well this offseason and say, you know what, we also need to hold the players accountable. What does that mean? Let's get started. Boy, when will this Piston season ever end? Let's look at the fan barometer before we get started. Actually, before we do that, Andy, let everybody know where they can find you online.
You can find me on Twitter at @D_D_Pistons_fan. I mean, if they're still watching games, let's see what these fans have to say. This is impressive that they're still watching.
Well, some of them might be saying what I just opened with. So Keith Smith at Keith Smith NBA. He's not a Piston fan, but he did give us updated 2024 NBA cap space projections. Number one position for 2024 NBA cap space. Andy, who is number one?
Going to be the Pistons with like
61.3 million. So that's what they have to spend. Just so you know, that's where it is right now. Amari Sinkova II, about 4 days ago, posted a story. I talked to a doctor about blood clots and how they affect professional athletes. As the Pistons navigate a Sar Thompson season-ending diagnosis, and link to the story there. I'll link that in the description there because it's definitely worth reading. And praying for Sar and Amari Sinkova II always does great work, great pieces that really affect like players' lives and not just the basketball-related stuff. Dojumars at Dojumars. That's at Dojumars. There's literally nothing that Troy Weaver can do this summer to make me trust him. Nothing. I don't care who he signs, trades for, etc. That being said, I can't see them firing him, which means this franchise is still dead. Mike/Crimmy at Crimson Helix posted a 2024, 12-59. 2023, 17-55. 2022, 19-52. The Pistons have got progressively worse every year since Troy Weaver got here. Yet it seems he and Arn Tillem have the most job security in the NBA. This is the worst pro organization in the U.S. Big Dog Pistons at Big Dog Pistons 1 says, how the apostrophe, Thesser only shot 5 times yesterday. What kind of BS development is that? Hashtag Pistons, hashtag Detroit basketball. Playing with two-way and G-leaguers, that's the development of a first-round pick guard that is an elite shooter. Bro, don't shoot. We want you to work on your passing. And then the face palm emoji. This was posted on the 25th of March, 2024. On that same day, Amari Sinkova II, Pistons beat writer for the Detroit Free Press, said, just end the season early if this is what it's going to be like for the last 10 games. You know it's bad when Amari's got to chime in and say that. It's what we're all thinking every game now. Just end it already. Big Dog Pistons again at Big Dog Pistons 1. Oh, I forgot to put Amari. Sorry, Amari. Amari Sankofa's handle is at Amari Sankofa. That's at @OmariSankofa. Big Dog Pistons at Big Dog Pistons 1 returns again and says, the product the hashtag NBA is putting out in Detroit is beyond hashtag embarrassing. Blatantly not playing guys while the owner is in California drinking wine, not giving AF. Longest losing streak in history. Chance of sell the team. Hashtag Pistons. Hashtag Detroit basketball. The GM fighting fans, again, face palm emoji, that's being used quite a bit. My guy, Sean Murphy, at Sean Halfcourt, tweeted out, this Pistons team is beyond broken. Legion Hoops, at Legion Hoops, after the New York Knickerbocker game, said, Monty Williams seemingly criticizes Dante DiVincenzo for stat padding his 11 threes. Quote, I don't care about their team. I couldn't care less. Those guys, the way they got their threes, I don't want that to be a part of that story, end quote. Josh Hart responds, if he didn't want to be part of the story, he should have told his guys to defend better, end gee, who do we sign with here, Andy? Do we side with Monty or do we side with Josh Hart?
I'm going to stay on Hart's side for this one.
Absolutely. If you didn't want to be a part of the story, you should have done something on the court. What a stupid statement by Monty. Like, you're mad you lost. You're mad you didn't do all that you could. Come on, man. That Cade season, at CADE2SZN. 4 years later, every team that was at the bottom of this draft, he's talking about the 2021 draft, is a playoff caliber team. Meanwhile, the playoffs are sitting at 12 wins with 11 games remaining. And he posts a picture of number one, Pistons, Cade Cunningham. Number two, Houston Rockets, Jalen Green. Number three, Cleveland Cavaliers, Evan Mobley. Number four, Toronto Raptors, Scotty Barnes. Number five, Orlando Magic, Jalen Suggs. Number six, Oklahoma City Thunder, Josh Giddey. The cheese stands alone in that picture. Oh, look at this. A tweet from October 2nd, 2023, where Pistons talk at Pistons _ talk says, Troy Weaver on realistic goals for the 2023-2024 season. Hashtag Detroit basketball. Quote, realistic goal for our team is to play 82 meaningful games. We want to go down to the wire. We just look at the last 25 games and not be in contention. We want to be in contention for 82 games the entire season, end quote. And then about 3 days ago, Pistons Talk responded, quoted his own tweet again and said, 82 meaningful games. Thinking face emoji. Michael Scotto at Mike A. Scotto. Josh Williams on Monty, or Josh Hart on Monty Williams. Dante DiVincenzo comments, if he didn't want to be a part of the story, he should have told his guys to defend better. What else there to say? We've got a guy that's hot. We're going to try to find the guy that's hot. That's common sense in basketball, end quote. Yeah, we can't agree with that anymore. Mike Curtis, shout out Mike Curtis, who was the Pistons beat writer for the Detroit News. He just announced today that he's leaving four different positions. So best of luck to you, Mike, in your newest endeavor. But he did write a story before leaving here. From directors of game presentation and logistics to the court assistant who helps the players during their pregame routines, to the social media team who provides fans with exclusive access, meet some of the women of the hashtag Pistons that make the NBA game go. And we'll link out to that story there, which he does present here again. That's Mike Curtis at Mike A. Curtis 2. Best of luck to you, Mike. We'll miss you for sure. Duncan Smith at Duncan Smith NBA is responding to Josh Hart's. If he didn't want to be part of the story, he should have responded better in the game. Duncan Smith at Duncan Smith NBA. Josh Hart is right. You roll out the worst roster in the NBA. You deserve whatever comes to you. Don't beg opponents to let up when the score gets ugly, Monty Williams. Yeah. Again, please. Can't agree more. Dot Mike says, we're only now, just now in game 73, getting to see Sasser in this role for the first time. And it's happening only as a result of numerous simultaneous injuries. This is the coach who was supposedly shepherd this roster into the next stage of his development. Womp, womp. Matt Griffin at Griff 1-on-1. That's at G-R-I-F-F number one, O-N. And again, the number one. Every Sasser touch, and he posts the meme of before, he ain't do nothing, step back, after, and then the guy's far, far away. And then the last one is Pierre Escargot at the Ethiopian Wolf. Again, that's at DaeEthiopianWolf. When we fire Troy Weaver, I'm legitimately going to break down in tears of joy. We share those same sentiments, Pierre. So what do you think of the fan barometer this week, Andy?
Well, like we say every week, it is amazing how things will always happen during the week, during games, during mostly losses. It gives us so much to talk about. Like, we never have a quiet week. Unfortunately, most of it isn't very good, but there's always things for us to talk about. I did see something about Dante DiVincenzo commenting on the whole thing. And I really loved his response because he's like, hey, I respect all the guys on the other side of the court. And if they did have an issue with it, they should just come and talk to me and we can talk about it. But that's not something we got to talk to the media about. And I was like, that's actually a very smart reply. But yeah, I'm still waiting for those 82 meaningful basketball games that I've been promised.
Maybe one. I mean, they were meaningful for sure. They just showed us that they are not ready for anything and that whatever development they've supposed to take, there's no development here. There's only regression. You talked to me beforehand, and as we're coming up with ideas this week, that there are people out there that think they're still going to take a step forward next season. The Pistons next season, yes, they will be somewhere between like a 30 to 40 win team. So we wanted to take time to address why that's not impossible. It's pretty close to impossible, though. Why?
Yeah, that it doesn't make any sense. And I know, like, everyone who has hope is thinking about some all-star player that another team is going to salary dump, or trading one of the young core members and getting a legitimate NBA player. The problem is, it's like you're pretending this season never happened, because last season they had 17 wins. Right now we have 12 wins, and this was with the return of Cade, who we can all agree had a good season. Like, next season we should still expect some improvement, but how much more is that really going to move the team forward? And let's say we finish with 12 wins. And let's be nice, we finish with 14 wins. If you add 10 wins on top of that, which would be a sign of actually great progress from season to season improvement, that gets us to 24 wins. That is far, far away from being a play-in team. And if you try to compare, like, recent successful teams, we'll use the Houston Rockets, because we have that little Rockets-Pistons rivalry on Twitter that people talk about. You can almost say everything went perfect for the Rockets this year. Now, I understand they've had a bunch of injuries and they've worked their way through it, but Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks have actually been the perfect fits for what that team needed. Şengün took a leap forward. They have a new coach that everyone bought into. Basically, everything went right for that team. Even things that they wanted to do that didn't work out went right. And what I'm talking about is, they were going to sign Lopez. They were going to give Brooke Lopez a giant offer to bring him over. And in the end, last moment, he decided to stay with Milwaukee. How different would things have been if he would have signed with them? Would Şengün have taken the leap? Would the whole team have worked out the way things did work out? Everything worked out magically. Sometimes you have to get lucky. Now, they made this huge leap with everything going right. And right now, I think that's like a 15-win improvement. They've got like 10 games to play. Let's say they finish with a 20-game win improvement, which would be fantastic. You stack 20 wins on top of 12, and you're at 32. And that's with everything going perfect. The same free agents that they got are not available this year. There are no free agents that are available that are going to be a perfect fit, that we can even sign on contracts. I know some people hate the Fred VanVleet contract, but actually next season, it's an expiring contract because the third year is a team option. So if they, right now they're completely happy, but if they weren't happy, they could trade him and move on or not pick up the option. Like, it didn't mess up their future at all. You want to talk about the Orlando Magic, who, again, they're making a big leap. But last season, I think they finished the second half or the second three quarters of the season 500. They showed a tremendous amount of progress before this year even happened. And you got like Jonathan Isaac, who I think last season only played 10 games. This year he played like 50. And I know he doesn't play a ton of minutes, but his on-off numbers for his defense are incredible. They drafted Anthony Black one pick behind Asar Thompson. I have honestly heard almost nothing about Anthony Black this year. And the reason is, he wasn't significant because how deep this team is. They've had a ton of injuries too, but they weren't relying on their lottery pick to make a huge difference. When the Pistons didn't have Asar, things would fall apart because he was the best wing defender they had. And when he's out, they've got nothing. So all these things are just me trying to say, for them to make a giant leap, even if they get like an all-star caliber player without giving up any of their quality players they have now, it is so unlikely. And I know it depresses people for next season, but if you just go into next season saying, hey, you know what? I hope we make it to 25 wins. That would be a great year. That's actually pretty realistic. And I don't think anybody wants to go into the offseason and start the preseason praying for 25 wins. But that's what happens when every year your team gets worse. There's just no way you can try to pretend that things are going to magically turn around.
Yeah, I mean, the tweet we read from Mike/Creamy laid it out. They went from 19 wins to 17 wins to now 12 to maybe they can claw their way a little bit above 17 wins. That's not progression. That's regression. And if I were to tell you at the beginning of the season, before this season started, we're going to get 60 games of Cade Cunningham at least. He's going to score over 20 points per game. He's going to shoot at least 48% from 35% from three, and 86% from the free throw line, pulling in over 4 rebounds, dishing out over 7 assists. I mean, that by itself probably would get people thinking that this team is in like 25 to 30 win territory, right? Because that sounds like a good season, and Cade was there enough to win a third to a half of the games that he did play in. What if I were also to tell you that Bojan scores just over 20 points per game as well, that he shoots over 40% from three on 7.4 three-point attempts per game, and that Burks as well produces over 12 points per game, shoots just over 40% from three on 5.7 attempts per game? What if I was to also tell you that Isaiah Stewart did take a leap forward as a three-point shooter? And oh, by the way, he averaged career highs in points per game, finally cracks double-digit points per game, shoots 38.3% from three and 75.3% from the free throw line. All of these would indicate that this season was a major progression. All of these things I'm telling you are true. All of these things are what you look on the basketball reference page, NBA.com/stats, wherever. These are all things that are true, but yet here we stand at 12 wins. What is it going to take to where they have players that have this similar kind of production, but mesh well together, that do more things on defense, and that can take, like you're saying, even a 20-game stretch forward, which is a major leap. You look at teams that struggle this, where they're in like the teens, and then the next year make a 20-digit game jump ahead. It doesn't happen very often. And what if I were to also tell you at the beginning of the season, like Asar Thompson is going to be flirting with all defense level ability? It's just like there are positives to take away from this, yes. But in spite of all the positives, the results still say 12 wins. You've got to be able to face that reality. There needs to be major changes everywhere else. And even if they take a step forward in development, it's going to take things that we've laid out before. Either they got to fire the coach, use the personnel better, because that's part of the reason why they've lost so many games and why they've only gotten 12 wins is because people have been miscast. We placed players in starting lineup who shouldn't have been in the starting lineup that you ultimately had to cut. You brought in useful veterans that you ended up just kicking off to the street and then having to fill in those roles with younger guys. You brought in guys off the street who didn't play at all on this team until March. So all of these things add up to where we don't even have a set rotation that we don't even have a set group of guys to build around. I know the phrase, the core four, is out there, but that's all it is right now. It's just a phrase. We laid that out maybe 3 or 4 episodes ago with looking at the most used lineup, and the most used lineup is one with Fontecchio in it, who just got here like 15 or 16 games ago. And then think about all of that health issue stuff that's on the way now. Even Ivy's been added to the list now. He has a knee problem. Like, what is going on? Just reiterate that. Fire your training staff. If Ivy's starting to miss games too with knee-related issues, something's got to be going on. I don't see how this team really takes that step forward. Can it take a step forward? Absolutely. But a major step forward? No. They have so much to figure out in spite of all the bright spots that are there.
And I think it was a couple episodes ago, you pointed out some of the, I think it was NBA University that tweeted a team's most used lineup for like 5 seasons in a row. And like this season's most used lineup was Cade, Ivy, Stewart, Duren, and Asar for 145 minutes. That was it. 145 minutes. And then everything is less than that. So it's like we don't even have that season of at least the guys played together. At least they got some familiarity with each other's games. And we have something to build. Like, no. Like, I know they used the term 2 years ago, ground zero. Like, they're at ground zero now. Like, I mean, I can't imagine winning less than 12 games next season. So this, you know, this has to be round zero. But it is just so unrealistic to expect much more from this team. Unfortunately, if one of the young players is going to take a leap, which young player have you seen Monty put in a role that you're like, oh, the way he's using him, I can definitely see a jump. Like, I don't see it. Like, I just don't see where there's room to get excited on something changing unless you want to blow everything up and start trading off young pieces, which to me is a bad idea. I mean, you look at Jalen Green, who just started playing really well for Houston, but it's like there were rumors they were going to trade him. And if you look at his numbers and Ivy's numbers, like Ivy has the same potential. I don't think he's the same athlete that he is, but the same potential there that you don't give up after two seasons, especially with the new head coach and this whole situation. So I don't see trading young players as an option. I do think, in my opinion, we need like three $20 million NBA players that fit a guard position, a wing position, and a center position that make the young guys compete, whether that's for a starting role, backup, or you're competing for minutes because the team needs to move forward. And the problem with that is Monty a coach that you have faith in making the decisions on who should start and who should come off the bench? I mean, he chose Killian to start the season and they waived him. We had a star starting and he put him on the bench. So then, you know, Livers could get more minutes and it's like, we traded him. So it's, yeah, it's not looking good, my friends. I'm sorry to say to cap next year at 25 wins, but that's pretty realistic.
Yeah, I mean, just to beat a dead horse, Monty just can't use these players correctly. It would be a miracle if next season he just doesn't do what he's done this season and he has a change of heart on Ivy and he actually doesn't push veterans to the forefront when maybe they shouldn't be there. Just whatever his criteria has been for like the guys I want to put around Cade has been bizarre, to say the least. And to think that that's going to change overnight in one offseason, again, highly unlikely. Shout out to Doc from the Pro Pistons podcast. He and I went back and forth on the Discord the other day, and he was saying, like, people that want to trade the young guys, like, there's a valid argument, and we should hold players accountable, which I agree to, and we're going to talk about that a little bit here. But to reiterate what we talked about last time, is like, what are you going to trade? Number one, the only things this team has to trade are Ivy, Duren, Cade, Stu, Asar. Right. Those are the major trade pieces. And then draft picks, whatever draft pick you can select somebody and then trade them this year. But then they still have that one that they owe to New York. So there's one that's still in limbo out there. So you're telling me that you want to trade either one of these young guys who might have not developed, who hasn't developed yet, who we don't know. And I don't want to sit here and make the argument of like they're going to be better than that. Oh, they're trash now. Trade them away because we don't know. None of us know. I'm just saying those are the pieces you have now that are worth something. What that is, who knows? But they're worth something. Get a return back. That's what you have to trade with. And then you're already down one pick. So if you do trade the picks you have, then you're down another pick there. And that's what you have to trade with. And realistically, what's the level of guy that you're going to get back? I searched around every team and thought of like, okay, this is probably realistic. It's not going to be like LeBron. It's not going to be like AD after LeBron leaves or whatever, because that level of guy is going to take multiple first round picks to pry away. And every year somebody does get unhappy. I understand that. And there's probably going to be somebody in the next 6 months that nobody's, you know, prognosticating about trading away, that magically they're like, I don't want to be here, and becomes available. But as we've stated before, Houston has multiple first round picks. Brooklyn has multiple first round picks. There are a bunch of different places that have multiple first round picks. Oklahoma City obviously has that treasure trove. They're probably prime destination number one to be able to pull off a move like that. The Pistons are just behind the eight ball and making a move for a player like that. You've brought up salary dump. I didn't really look into that because it's like what Ben Simmons, Zach LaVine, maybe like Lonzo Ball, like those, sure, you can make the case for those, but I don't think that's what anybody's asking for in terms of making this team better. That's more what I want and what you want of like, okay, we'll take on this guy's bad salary and give me an extra pick or two. That could be something. the vets that are actually out there. We talked about Mikal Bridges. I think that's probably like the top type of guy that realistically you could return with like an Ivy Durin and a pick or two, right? That's probably the top tier veteran that this team could realistically return.
I agree with that. But then my question would be, he has question marks, in my opinion, from his performance this season. And how much does that really move the needle before you have to start paying him big money?
Yeah, like we said last time, Mikal only has next season and the season after, so you have two seasons for it. But, I mean, he hasn't really shown to be the man that kind of limits the ceiling. And anybody else that's below that level, do you really want to trade Ivy Durin, Asar, Stu, picks for the guys I'm about to name? Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, Dorian Finney-Smith. Those are salary guys you could get away from the Brooklyn Nets that would work here, that are the improvements that we need. Cam Johnson, the volume three-point shooter. Everybody wanted to sign last offseason. Still a great volume three-point shooter. Can play either forward spot. Dorian Finney-Smith, older, but again, gritty forward that can shoot the three there. Obviously, that's one that I'm sure people would be like, no, we don't want to trade a pick. No, we don't want to trade one of the younger guys for. This is part of my point. Harrison Barnes, a guy that you've brought up before, that the Kings are capped out in terms of their salary. They want Keegan Murray to be pushed more to the forefront. He's probably going to take Harrison Barnes' job eventually, but maybe they free up some money, switch, and get somebody else around there. Again, the problem with that, though, is does a team that's continually making the playoff push that wants to go further into the playoffs, is that team going to want a Jaden Ivey? Is that team going to want a Jalen Duren? Is Isaiah Stewart enough to return a Harrison Barnes? Questions I don't know the answer to. And Harrison Barnes is 31 years old and he's got like 2 years left on his deal. Is that really what you want to give up? A young guy who could potentially be better than that, or a first round pick that you can get somebody at the level of a Harrison Barnes who will be 33 when this contract comes up. Is that really what you want to spend this capital on? The other guys are the Lakers really need to do something about their money situation because they're fighting through their playing lives right now. LeBron gets injured at the end of every year. AD, you know, did whatever he could this year to stay healthy. Knock on wood, cross your fingers, say your prayers that nothing happens to him going forward. D'Angelo Russell, there was rumors he was going to get moved. We don't want another guard, so that one's probably off the table. We definitely don't want another guard who demands the ball and doesn't play defense. The other guy on the Lakers that has a bigger contract that could be a fit is Rui Hachimura. If you haven't looked at Rui's shooting numbers, by the way, go look at his three-point shooting numbers. He's improved quite drastically. I was surprised, too, because when I was doing this list, I was like, I don't think I'm going to consider him. And then I went and looked at his shooting numbers, and I was like, whoa, I had no idea that Rui Hachimura was shooting 42.3% from three on 3.3 attempts per game. Obviously, you would like that to go up. But anybody that's shooting 40% from three that can play either forward spot, please bring them to the Pistons. But again, that's probably like the line here for me between like Mikal Bridges and one of the other guys I'm going to mention here later on. And everybody else who's clearly most likely not going to be as good as Ivy or Durin. Like Rui's on the line where you're like, oh, he's a useful player. He's still solid. He can do a bunch of different things. He's younger. But you feel like Ivy and Durin can be better than that. So it's another one. I'm sure most Piston fans will be like, nah, no, Rui, please. If that's what we're giving up is Ivy, Durin, Stu. First round picks, like, can't be given enough for Rui. Andrew Wiggins is another one. I know he really struggled at the beginning of the year and whatever's going on off the court. Hopefully he's got his family and his life in order and everything can just be healthy and go back to normal for him. But he's turned it around. He's shooting like 36% from three. He's really been shooting very well in the last like 20 or 30 games. It seems like he's rounding himself more into form. Golden State, again, is really strapped for cash. Aaron Wiggins plays for Oklahoma City Thunder. Andrew Wiggins is making like over $26 million per season moving forward. I don't know that they can really pay Andrew Wiggins that money when they have Kuminga, who's up for a deal coming up. They still have Moses Moody, who should be earning more minutes as well. Like Andrew Wiggins and then Draymond just doing his stupidity. Who knows what's going to happen with Draymond? Steve Henson the other day on our Slack chat was like, I wonder if the Warriors would throw Moses Moody in if the Pistons took Draymond Green off their hands, which honestly, like, I'm not opposed to, but I just don't think Golden State's going to break up those three guys. But it really depends on Clay. If like they do let Clay go, then I think that might be an impossibility to entertain, which I'm not opposed to. Draymond Green and all of the warts and intricacies and whatever else you want to say about his personality and about what he's done this season, just recently in terms of fighting people and getting suspended all the time. I get it. I get it that people don't want him here, but the attitude, the fight, the defensive IQ, like that's absolutely who this team needs. And oh, by the way, Draymond's quietly been shooting 38.4% from three this season. So again, if Golden State's magically started to want to break up their guys and they're like, hey, we like Durant or hey, we like Ivy, we'll give you Moody, we'll give you Draymond and maybe like a second round pick. I'm not opposed to that one. That's an interesting one to me. And I know Draymond's talked about wanting to come back to Michigan. I don't know if he's the kind of guy who it's good to come back home. That's another conversation for another day. And then the last one is the Hawks have a bunch of guys. They're fighting at the bottom of their play-in again. They have fighting for their playoff, the play-in lives right now. I mean, they have Bogdan Bogdanovic, who 31 years old, kind of in and out of the lineup with injuries. He's one, again, I don't think is worth giving up a young guy or a first-round pick for, even though he'd be a good fit, 6'6", wing shooter, can create a little bit, solid defender. But is he worth giving up the Durant Ivy first-round pick for? I don't think so. DeAndre Hunter, who I've always liked, but health, I mean, his health has probably been worse than somebody like Cam Johnson. He also can't shoot it like Cam Johnson can. So I don't think DeAndre Hunter is worth giving up any future assets for. If he were a salary dump that they just wanted to get off that contract, that's another conversation that I think the Pistons should be open to where he's at least a functional forward that can man small forward and power forward and shoots well enough. They're like, sure, we'll take him as a salary dump because he needs it. Clint Capela, we've all wanted a veteran center to come in for Jalen Duren and show him the ropes and play like 25 minutes. Duren can play the other, or, you know, they're the close to the minutes played together and he can just help Duren at least get to one shot block per game. That's another one. I don't think he would be somebody you trade future assets for either, though. I think it would be more like salary dump, like I'm saying. And the big one on the Hawks, who's probably right behind Mikal Bridges in terms of like the realistic quote unquote difference maker the Pistons could trade for, is DeJounte Murray. Again, another guard. His defense has gone up and down. He got better as a 3-point shooter, so that would be good. But I think you run into the same problems that Ivy and Cade have been running into in terms of giving them the ball. Neither of them is the best off-ball player. We've seen how that dynamic has worked with Trey and DeJounte. It hasn't really translated to big time success. So while I think that would be an improvement from where this team is at, and it would result in where the Hawks are probably at now with like 33 wins by the end of the season here, fighting to get in the play-in, I don't think that is also worth giving up the future of either an Ivy or Duren, who could be at the level of a DeJounte Murray, or the first round pick, where at least you have another bite at the apple to get a chance to bring in a difference maker. Whereas DeJounte Murray, he's fine, he's solid, but the fit with Cade is weird. And we've already seen what he works with alongside another guard who needs the ball in his hands. It doesn't really translate to big time success. I mean, his defense has been up and down. All these guys. And then the last one is the big like question mark, and that's the Timberwolves. If the Timberwolves flame out in the first round, they're already an expensive team. I think they're like the second or third highest payroll in the NBA. They have so many big contracts from Cat to Ant-Man to Jaden McDaniels to even like Naz Reid down there. Like they're already looking at the luxury tax. And if they flame out after having a great season this year, they've been flirting with the number one overall seed the last month. I think the Nuggets just overtook them. I mean, if they get in the playoffs and just get stomped by somebody in the first round, that might be a deterrent to where they're like, we can't keep this payroll. We at least have to get off one big contract. I hate this one because I would like the big contract to be Jaden McDaniels, but keeping it real, who's missed a lot of time on this Timberwolves squad in the meantime, they've been pretty good. Who's missed all that time, even though they've still been pretty good, Andy?
We don't want Cat. Stop it. Stop it right now.
That's my point. That's the other quote-unquote difference maker. He would come in and get buckets. He would come in, and him and Kate could probably pull a team to 30 wins by themselves. But what are you doing around them? Cat has infamously been a terrible defender. It's part of the reason why we don't want him, despite him being the best three-point shooting center probably ever in the history of the NBA, who would work fantastically alongside Cade Cunningham. He's also a health risk, which his team does not need also. And oh my gosh, if Weaver and company traded Ivy and then brought Cat in to play alongside Dern, forget it. That's probably like 30 wins is your cap, because your defense is just going to be sunk. You still have no point of attack defender at point guard. Poor Sar and Stu have to make up for a bunch of the forward spots. And then again, Cat makes up for a lot of the shooting for sure, but there's still a lot of perimeter questions on this team. Like, Mikhail is probably the best option in terms of if they did want to. And I don't think any of us could really sit up here and criticize it if they say they traded both Ivy and Duren for Mikhail Bridges and then sign like a Nick Claxton and then bring in like another shooter. That's not a bad idea, but that's the level of player you hope for at the best. And the bad thing about Mikhail is there's already been reports that the Nets turned down 4 first-round picks for Mikhail Bridges. From Houston, I believe. I forget which team it was that offered them 4 first-round picks, and they turned it down. Maybe they're like, okay, we don't have any avenue to rebuild right now, and so we want a draft pick, and we want guys like Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren. That actually makes sense. That, like, okay, we made a mistake, thought he could be a franchise-altering guy, but he's not. Let's start over and do that. That makes sense. But I think that's the very tip-top of the difference maker that you could trade away Ivy and Dern for and feel okay. And even that one, I'm like, well, like we said last time, 2 years. You got 2 years to make this thing viable, to where Cade feels good that this is going forward, and to where you know Mikhail is going to re-sign because he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of that. And Detroit's history with unrestricted free agents, just not good, man.
That was a really good list because it was realistic. I mean, in almost most of those trades, you're kind of like, which is usually the sign of a good trade, where it's like, not really. I was hoping to get more. I was hoping to give up a little less. But that's usually where it's kind of balanced. And to my point, most trades are like lateral moves. You're not really getting that much better, but you're hoping, unless you're giving up more, but then you're hoping that the fit is so much better that that's where you're making your gain, that you're fixing a team weakness or you're improving on a team strength to the point where it's like best in the league. But I mean, none of those trades make you say, oh yeah, that's the deal we got to do. Most of them are kind of like, yeah. And then you're really trading improvement now, which may not be a lot, or any potential possibility that one of these young guys does improve. Like, that's gone. And unfortunately, most likely they will look better on whatever team we send them to. They will look better. I know I'm in the minority in thinking that I don't think the Timberwolves do anything. And I know they're super expensive. But I could totally see, even if they flame out in the playoffs, I would totally see them running it back. I know that the offer they had for buying the team, that changed today. Like, that did not go through.
A-Rod strikes out. What do you know?
But I just think that these teams have appreciated so much in value. The owner who backed out of the deal is kind of like, I can make more money selling the same piece to someone else down the road. I just don't see them blowing it up for money right now. That could totally be different at the trade deadline next season. But in my opinion, for the Pistons, like, can Weaver really afford to be waiting for the trade deadline next season?
Do you know who the GM of the Minnesota Timberwolves is?
I don't remember his name, but I am familiar with him.
Tim Connolly. You know what team he put together before the Timberwolves?
No.
The Nuggets. So I think even if they do successful in the playoffs, I think the writing's on the wall for Cat to leave. if I were them, and Tim Conley's a smart guy, look at how he put together the Nuggets. It is based around defense and making sure that you have a good defensive infrastructure along with the explosive offensive guys and the role players that fit around your main superstar or superstars. To me, it seems like any smart GM would look at the way this team is playing now and be like, we don't need Cat. Let's sell him off. Let's sell him off for a couple picks. That's all they need to. That's all they need to do. And their team is still going to be good. They've had Cat long enough too to know, okay, he gets injured all the time and he's hurting this defense. So the defense seems to be doing better or doing just as good when he's not in the lineup. So why not? Why not sell that and get extra picks where Tim Connell use extra pick to get other guys on the Nuggets in like the middle to later first round as well? Like, it seems like that should be the play to do. And then and this is not an argument to say like the Pistons should trade for Cat. It's just an argument to say I think Cat is going to be available. And, you know, Troy Weaver's, you know, I love centers. I'm unapologetic for centers. It's just it lines up too perfectly, unfortunately.
So my counter to that, which I agree, and I think the way Naz Reid has played, I wanted him in free agency. The fact that they drafted Leonard Miller, like, I believe they are preparing to move on from Cat. So I totally see that. I totally get it. I just think it's really hard for your team to actually finally have great success. And then depending on how they do in the playoffs, and then be like super confident that it's like, you know what, we're gonna change this. Even though we've had, you know, good results with okay results without him. I just feel like it's much more likely for them to say, you know what, we're going to run it back and then move him. Even if they lose a little leverage when they move him, I just think it's harder to break up the winner when your team has never had that than it is to say, well, we're going to move him for such and such picks. And then if things don't work out and the next season you're not nearly as good, then you have a fan base that's like, what did we? And even as a GM, you're like, did I blow it? Like, because they have a legitimate, like, I don't believe in them, but they have a legitimate shot to go all the way this year. Like, record-wise, talent-wise, they could do it. I don't think they're ready. But to break up a team at that point just for, and I know they're expensive, but they're just starting their luxury problems, where a team like Golden State has been in it for so long that that's why it's just ridiculous that I could see them pushing it a little bit more. But, yeah, I don't want Cat, even though I do think him and Cade would look really good. And you could rearrange the roster around them to like focus on those two. The only issues is then you're making moves on the margin because your cap situation is the season after that. You're giving Cade his money and you're giving, you know, Cat his money. And then it's like, yeah, like goodbye, Cat.
Yeah, and you better pray that Cat stays healthy the remainder of his career, because the minute he gets injured, forget it. There goes half of your team. And like we said before, defensively, Cat's just never been that good. And then you've already had defensive question marks here. All right, offensively, it would be great. They seem like they would be a good pair together, Cade and Cat, but it's just a bad marriage. But we'll see what happens with Minnesota. If I were them, I would at least try and move on from Cat for extra picks or somebody like Mikal Bridges, like we just laid out there, who could fit alongside in that core too, and continue to keep having them, you know, be successful here. I mean, the where the Pistons are at right now, for me, it was this Minnesota Timberwolves game. Speaking of the Minnesota Timberwolves, we're recording this on March 28th, 2024. Last night on the 27th, the Pistons played, quote unquote, I'm using that term very loosely, the Minnesota Timberwolves. Cade scored 32 points, and I was watching that game, seeing the other guys do nothing. Yeah, Jaden Ivey's not out there, but I mean, Marcus Sasser's out there, Jalen Duren's out there, and nobody's doing anything else. Like, it's just Evan Fournier chucking up shots, Malachi Flynn chucking up shots, and then Cade being his efficient, normal self, dropping 30. I think this team has to be able to look at this now and be like, okay, Cade's the guy. Everybody else is playing for their job. That doesn't mean that we don't keep Ivy. That doesn't mean that we don't keep Duren, Stu, Asar. That doesn't mean still that they don't play major minutes. But that has to be the mentality now. Like, everybody else has to just be playing for a job now, because it's clear the effort isn't always consistently there. The consistency isn't there. They need to be able to bring in veterans or bring in other players that can push the guys they already have, or they can at least cycle in when they're laying an egg like they did last night. Brooklyn's the one that I'm thinking about with this. Like, they re-signed Cam Johnson after trading for him when they already had Royce O'Neal, when they already had Dorian Finney-Smith, when they already had Lonnie Walker, who can play on the wing there. They brought him in off the street. And they have Cam Thomas, who plays at the shooting guard position. They have all these guys who play small forward, power forward. And it's not like they were like, oh, we have too many bodies here. No, they cycle those guys in and out. When Cam Johnson's hurt, then Royce O'Neal, Dorian Finney-Smith come in and man the three and the four. When Dorian Finney-Smith is thinking it up, then Royce O'Neal, Cam Johnson fill in for him. When nobody's shooting very well, Cam Thomas, excuse me, you have too many Cams on that team. Cam Thomas is just being wholly inefficient. Then Lonnie Walker comes in and lights it up from three. That's what this team needs to be doing. It's part of the reason why we keep saying fire Weaver, fire Monty, because Weaver has shown he is not going to do this. He has just pushed all his chips in on the guys he drafted, where Jalen Durden didn't really have a backup center coming into the year, so it was all on him. And if he didn't play well, if his defense wasn't good, then the defense of this team was just going to suck, and the big man spot was going to suck. He pushed in all his chips on Beef Stew to improve from three and play the power forward spot, even though they didn't support him the way he should and force him to shoot more threes. They just put him in post-up situations where like this. And even though a lot of us, so many people were like, sign Cam Johnson, sign Grant Williams at the power forward spot. Even if you want to start Stewart, at least cycle them in and out, because Stewart's still learning. When he's not feeling it, then you put one of those guys in, or you just start them and let Stu come in off the bench and far away from three. That made sense, but that's not what Weaver did, because he had Isaiah Livers, another guy he pushed all his chips in for. Be like, nah, he's going to fill in that role behind Stewart, or maybe he can even start for Stu. And then Jaden Ivey as well. They didn't even bring the guy they brought in to supplement supposedly Ivy and Cade was Monty Morris, who they never ended up playing anyway. Right now for the Timberwolves has something like 45 assists to three turnovers. It is ridiculous that I wish he was here and he's still shooting 40% from three. Like, they didn't do that. Instead, again, we were pushed all his chips in to Cade and Ivy, never realizing Monty was going to sabotage that with Killian Hayes, who's another guy that he pushed in all his chips for and said, that's what we're going to do, instead of bringing in veterans that they can at least cycle in, that they know the skills that they do, that they had in training camp built in to have somewhere between like a 15 to 20 minute role that could blossom into something else, like it is with Lonnie Walker, like it is with Dorian Finney-Smith, because guys get injured or because guys underperform. So those guys, Lonnie Walker, Dorian Finney-Smith, end up playing more minutes because of that. If we just had two guys on this Piston team, like a Lonnie Walker, like a Dorian Finney-Smith, who could have stepped in to the shooting guard spot, who could have stepped in to the power forward spot to fill in the roles when Stu's not feeling it or when Ivy's having his struggles with Cade. I mean, that probably gets them to that like 25 win mark, because then you have at least that consistent scoring guy and role player around Cade. But that's, again, not what Weaver has done. And I just don't believe that going into his fifth year that he's magically going to change his mind on that. That's just not how he's operated all 4 years he's been here, when that is what he needs to do. And really, a new GM needs to come in. Somebody who is at the forefront, a new VP of basketball, whatever you want to call them. Somebody has to come in to be the boss, to get an objective set of eyeballs to look at everybody on this team with a new set of eyeballs, to where they're not pushing all their chips in on them already, to where they actually get an outside view of like, okay, this is what they do, this is what they don't do, this is what the team needs. Okay, even if I believe in this guy, I still want to bring in the skills that we're lacking on this roster. Weaver's not doing that because he wants to push all his chips on his draft picks and then bring in Joe Harris and Monty Morris and guys that are injured or just don't ever see the court to be their veteran presence that really isn't there.
Yeah, that's so... Expecting Weaver to be different than how he has been his entire time with the Pistons, yeah, not likely. And for me, it's like, well, how different are we really expecting Monty to be next season? Like, are you telling me that he, I don't want to say purposely, but there's a reason why he made so many decisions that seem illogical and don't make sense that next year he's going to make sense? Or did he just kind of reveal that, you know what, maybe I'm not as good as I used to be? I mean, just like players, coaches fall off. They reach a point where the league is a little different. Maybe the way they communicate is a little different and they're no longer as successful as they used to be. Because right now, we haven't really seen anything from him, in my opinion, that would expect, that I would expect with different players, for him to maximize their results. Because I think you were the one telling me Sasser's shooting numbers, where it's like, we drafted Sasser because he's a great shooter, but then you're telling me, yeah, he shoots more off the bounce than he does is off catch and shoot threes right now. And it's like,
yeah, you want to hear those numbers?
I want to hear them.
So frequency, how frequently in his offensive game does Marcus Sasser shoot pull-ups versus catch and shoot threes? Frequency, Marcus Sasser on pull-ups, 59.9% of his shots are pull-ups, whereas 19.3% of his shots are catch and shoot. Like, that's broken. Ask any rookie to come in and shoot that many pull-up shots where you're dribbling around and then you pull up and shooting is absolutely stupid. There's no rookie that is going to be able to handle that kind of a load and be any good at it, let alone one that's a late first-round pick.
We've talked all season about how this team needs more floor spacing. And that's where just some of the decisions are baffling, because it's like Stu is having a good season shooting from three. So let's take one of our few above league average shooters and let's post him up and surround him by people who can't shoot three. Like, it just makes zero sense. So many of the decisions. And that's where my question is, even if we get better players, are we going to get a better Monty next season? Are we going to get a coach who's, because it doesn't matter who the guards are. He doesn't stagger any of them. At first, I thought it was like a Ivy and Cade type issue, but it's like, no, your guards are Cade and Sasser for the game against Minnesota. You know what? Why don't you stagger them a little bit? Nope. We're going to make sure we give, you know, Malachi. And Malachi Flynn, he played well. That's fine. But that's not my point. My point is, are you going to do the things to maximize what this team needs to win? And the answer is no. Like, when Stu returned from injury, it would have been a great time. Fontecchio was in the starting lineup. That unit was good. Bring him off the bench. We could still get him 30 minutes by staggering players, something Monty doesn't do. But we could still get him his 30 minutes, and we could have eliminated the Wiseman minutes. They didn't do that. That was a choice, which means they want to bring Wiseman back. And if we are bringing Wiseman back, how much better is the team going to be if Jalen Duren and James Wiseman is your 48-minute center rotation? Like, I don't care what all-star you bring in. If that's your center rotation, your ceiling is capped on how much your team is improving, because defensively, you've set a limit.
Yeah, and this is to hold the players accountable too. Obviously, we've talked mostly about Weaver and Monty just sabotaging his team left and right. My whole point with this segment is to acknowledge, like, what Doc is saying from Pro Pistons, that it is partially the players' fault. And you got to go into the next season saying that, okay, Cade definitely has proven himself to be a starter that we want to be a foundational piece. Everybody else, like, you got to be playing for your job. And if you're that kind of player that you want to get better, you realistically have to look at this film. You have to look at the season and everybody, from the players, the coaches, to the GM, and be like, wow, we suck. And we got to go back to the drawing board. And any player that doesn't look at themselves that way and be like, yeah, this is bad, and I should be held accountable and not demand a starting job. Like, that would be a major red flag to me, is if I came in next year and anybody, even Cade, is like, no, man, I'm the man. I earned my spot and whatever. It's like, you were on a 12-win team. Like, everybody's got to be better. Even if you were good last year, everybody's got to be better. Everybody's starting. Everybody's fighting for a starting spot. And I might even frame it that way with Cade, but I mean, obviously, Cade's going to rise to the top. And this Minnesota game proves that he's still out there fighting, man. He's still out there scrapping. He's still out there wanting to put it all on the line, because really, he's somebody that shouldn't be putting it all on the line. And he's somebody that realistically you could see just being like, ugh, I can't wait for this to be over. But he's given maximum effort as part of why he was the number one overall pick, and people have believed in him so much, because he does not care who is on the floor with him. is going to play his game, and why I say he's the one that like earned his spot. Every night you see him go out there and he's not overthinking it. He's able to look at the defense and say, okay, this is the shot that I'm going to take. This is the teammate I'm going to pass. He's always trying to find what is the best thing to do. What's the best way to attack this offense in order to help my team score some buckets? Everybody else has not been able to do that kind of a thing. That's why Cade is head and shoulders above everybody else. I mean, Durin just taking this, probably the most step back. I don't know if anybody listens to the Game Theory podcast out there, but when Sam Vecenie and Bryce Simon, Motor City Hoops, did their postseason, offseason preview, because they're starting to do those for the players that are the teams that have been eliminated from playoff contention. Surprise, the Pistons were number one. Yeah, Sam said he's not impressed at all with Durin. He thought he really is lost on defense, not a good defender. And even the passing, which I was surprised to hear somebody say, he's like, I'm just not impressed even with his passing because he's not progressing in that. He's just kind of making the same reads he did last year. And really, Sam's like, I walked away not impressed with him at all. Whereas, like, he at least went to bat for Ivy, saying, like, I don't know what Monty happened. So, yeah, Durin's the one for me that, like, he clearly has to have somebody else to push him, and he has to stop being coddled the way that he has and just think that it's okay to give the effort of defense that he gave, like, against Bam. And last night against the T-Wolves, there were so many times where I'm like, how did that guy get to the rim? And meanwhile, Durin's just standing there watching him dunk or watching him fly by. It's just like, where is the effort, man?
Yeah, I'm really hoping that what Durin has done, because he's improved in areas offensively. We've seen some horrible bad habits, but he has improved in areas offensively. And I'm just hoping next season it's like, take all those improvements, but everything's going on the defensive end. We don't need anything else from you offensively. We need defensive improvements. But then again, we need a veteran center who can push him. And it's unfortunate that Taj Gibson hurt his hamstring because his mentoring of James Wiseman is no longer working due to his hamstring injury.
You know, you got to get squat low and get in his face to be able to talk and make sure the lessons really, really get there. Yeah, everybody's got to go into next season earning the job, man. It's just nobody's cutting it. Again, we're on 12 wins. We'll see where it ends up. I'm guessing it's probably like 14 or 15, but everybody's got to earn their spot next year. Again, we're not saying that they shouldn't start. We're not saying that they shouldn't still play a major role or major minutes. We're just saying you can't go into next season penciling anybody other than Cade into the starting lineup because of how bad it's been. And if you really want to take a step forward, then you have to bring in players that can succeed in roles and that your young guys can either step up and prove like, yes, I'm better than them, or they can fill in a supplementary role themselves. And you actually have functional offense. You have a defense, something of a defense at least, because this season is regressed from 4 years. 19 wins, 17 wins, we're at 12. Like, I can't believe we're still having this conversation about, oh yeah, they're going to be great next year. Like, stop. Just stop deluding yourselves. They got to take baby steps.
Yeah, and that's where an offseason of three vets that push the players, and people need to understand that even if one of the young guys goes from starter to the bench for next season, it's not a problem. You know, the year after, when they get better, they can move back into the starting lineup. But how much better your team gets, if you think about it, you take a player who was starting and now they're getting reserve minutes, preferably because the other person's better. And the person you had playing in reserve is no longer seeing the court. And that was my argument with, you know, Stu as the backup center versus Wiseman, that, and I'm pulling for the kid to develop. I'm just saying, if we're trying to win games, this is how you have to do it. But then your coach still has to connect with that, because the Pistons have like 1,000 players injured and Monty will still have a 10-man rotation. That basically means you're playing players 11 through 15 on your lineup, giving them minutes. Some of them are two-way guys because of all the injuries we have, where some coaches regularly only play eight guys because those are the most talented eight guys that they have. And if you had an eight-man rotation and you have five guys injured, like, the coach doesn't say, you know what, we're going to play an additional like 10 more guys. No, it's the bare minimum to get by. And I understand that they're like, yeah, but they can't carry that load of minutes for that. Dude, you've got 12 wins. Like, stop it. Just stop it.
Oh, like Amari Senkova the second said, can this season just end already? Like, we're all ready for it to be over, man. As much as I love seeing Cade drop 32 like that and dunk on the Wolves and stuff, it's just like, oh, we just want to know what's going to happen next. Even though most of us have been pretty reserved to the fact that somehow Weaver and Monty and all them are going to be brought back despite all the embarrassment and the lack of attention to detail, the lack to change and admit it when you make mistakes. It just sucks. Please just end this season. Andy, let everybody know where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at D_D_Pistons_fan. I'm actually very curious about tomorrow night's game against the Wizards, because I wonder if they're actually trying to win this game or if Cade takes a day off for knee management, Ivy's knee is still hurt, and like basically we let Flynn and Fournier do their own thing so that they can get a loss to the Wizards, because that loss guarantees them basically number one worst record, because they're not going on some run to win some games. I think that would be three games the Wizards would have up on us and the tiebreaker. So then I can basically cheer for them to win the rest of the games for the entire season. But I'm just curious to see what they do. Do they try to win, or I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, it's our Super Bowl, man. It's our NBA Finals. It's all come down to this. So yeah, thank you everybody listening to us, and we'll catch you next time. Who knows where this team will be at by then. Please just end the season. I'm going in.